Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. A federal appeals court has thrown out the criminal convictions of three former Massachusetts Probation Department officials 6 years after a questionable hiring system was exposed in the probation department. The court said that while former probation commissioner John O'Brien and his top deputies Elizabeth Tavares and William Burke did not properly run the department, there were no federal crimes committed in giving jobs to politically connected candidates. To get a sense of some of the ramifications of this ruling, we spoke earlier with criminal defense attorney Brad Bailey, who's also a former prosecutor. We also spoke with former state attorney general Scott Harshbarger. I started by asking Bailey, who represented Tavares, for his reaction to the ruling.
I'm delighted for my client Liz Tavares, who spent 30 years dedicating herself as a professional in the corrections field and in probation. And the fact that they have shown that she did not engage in any wrongdoing or criminal conduct is justice delayed, but certainly justice well-deserved for her.
Maybe not wrongdoing on the part of federal law, but the court also said that the department, that the officials misran the department. I actually wasn't sure that was a word until I read the ruling, but also they called what was happening in the department distasteful, that there definitely was a rigged system going on there. So what do you say to that, Brad? I mean, it wasn't pretty. It may not have technically violated federal law, but it certainly wasn't the way the system was supposed to work.
Well, it's like sausage making, and it isn't pretty, but patronage has been a part of state government here in Massachusetts for as long as I've been here in Massachusetts and beyond me. And what the First Circuit said is, look, if you don't like how the state does its hiring practices, don't take federal statutes and try to force round pegs into square holes. No matter how distasteful you may have found the practices, it wasn't criminal under federal law.
Let's focus on that, because the key here is that this was did not vindicate in any way the individuals involved or the system that was involved here. A very clearly a pay-to-play system, a patronage system that had ran for years. The system was rigged. Recommendations were changed, that they were changed in order to give a favoritism to people recommended by legislators and others. The court condemned that, but perhaps rightly said, this is not a federal criminal violation, as Brad is pointing out, and he's exactly right about that. But that does not mean it was right. The fact of the matter is, this is a serious ethical and moral violation, in addition to which, just a failed set of leadership for years within the system. Patronage hiring tainted the entire probation system. You know as well as I did that Massachusetts went from being a national leader in probation, in leadership, and pioneering efforts and innovation, and over the 10-year period became essentially a patronage haven. And so you're not wrong. I don't mean that, and I understand what the law is. What the point here is, this is about the question of what are the core, how is the state government going to function? It is not a necessary part of state government that patronage is not essential to make the wheels grind here. So the point is, patronage may well not be a federal crime, but does not make it the right thing to do.
But vindication is appropriate because these people were charged with crimes, and they were convicted with crimes, and very serious ones. There isn't a federal crime that's applicable, and there isn't a state crime that's applicable. If you're saying, which you've said for a long time and consistently and been a leader on, that this is an ethical issue and it needs to be cleaned up ethically, that's an entirely different thing.
And what I hope it's in the past, that this was a practice in Massachusetts. Probably that's naive, but the fact is, this opinion ought not to, you know, not to be a rallying cry for let's go back to the good old days when we really could influence every state agency higher if we wanted to, and if we didn't, we cut off their funding.
But even though we had this scandal in Massachusetts, there was an article about a year ago, a follow-up from the Globe Spotlight team, showing that really not that much had changed in the probation department, that there were still a lot of employees who had either been in the or hired in the old patronage system or they benefited from it. The article named Kathleen Petrolotti, wife of the state representative Tom Petrolotti. He was called the king of patronage and had apparently a bunch of jobs linked to him in the probation department. And then also, they said in this other hiring process that had been put in place after O'Brien, there was a woman who was supremely qualified for a job, but she did not get it. Instead, that job went to someone less qualified, but who was the son of a sheriff.
Yeah.
So those things were still going on in probation. So my overall question is, how is public interest served in all of this to make sure that you are having an unrigged hiring system?
Right.
How exactly do you do that when you've still got this going on after some alleged reforms?
Because
in the
you can specifically hold people accountable, Deb. Now, for this, I mean, that as I said, these recommendations have been in effect. In fact, the Court Management Advisory Board has just been given a mandate by the Supreme Judicial Court to look again now 5 years later and see what issues still exist. How are the recommendations being implemented? The very case that you pointed out was that one of the decisions that was made, rightly or wrongly, as a managerial issue, was that they were not going to root out everybody in the system who had taken advantage of that, because it was, as Brad points out, it was a broken system. People, even good people in it, as John McCain used to say about the campaign finance system, it corrupts even good people in it.
Brad,
Deb, I'm all for merit hire and clean government. But the reality is a part of constituent services of elected officials and public officials is to look out for people in their constituencies and people who are off seeking jobs.
But look out is a vague term, right, Brad?
Yeah,
look out for
somebody
is a very vague term.
We do it all the way to appointments to our service academies through congressmen and congresswomen. And we are a small, tight provincial state here. And often when you have a stack of resumes, the hiring committees need to look to people that they may know, they may work with, who say, yes, I know this person, and this person would be a good fit, or I endorse this person, or I put my name behind that. That's good patronage. Yes, there's bad patronage, but there's also good patronage, and you're never going to root that out, because sometimes that's the only way to make a discerning decision.
If what this ruling says is that this did not cross a federal line, and it cites a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that overturned the conviction of the former Virginia governor, Robert McDonald, so it said, really, there's a different standard here if you want the feds policing a state agency. So if I'd like to understand a little bit more of how the feds got to do this in the first place, and why didn't the state attorney general's office take this over, if that would be the appropriate place? And if not the feds, then who? Scott Harshbarger.
Well, the United States attorney has, in many cases, essentially taken over the role of being the prosecutor of public corruption in Massachusetts, because for a long time the statutes in Massachusetts were the weakest felonies were public corruption and white-collar crime. That wasn't an accident. The feds have tended to criminalize conduct that otherwise should be dealt with, in my view, as ethics violations, or should be dealt with by state and local prosecutors who are elected and accountable to the people. In this case, the United States Attorney did what she felt was the appropriate thing to do, and I credit her for doing that. I think people in the State House ought to think about, why is it that the United States Attorney feels that he or she has to come in to police state government in Massachusetts? And that means that we have to give the appropriate power to do these to the State Attorney General, to our prosecutors, and deal with this seriously. And that's up to the legislature and the governor as well. So,
Scott, let me interrupt you. You're a former attorney general.
Yes,
did
I
you
am.
Feel that you did not have the power to take on something like this? Would you not have been able to have prosecuted a case against?
No, you could, based on the facts, you would make an, a judgment of whether you had the criminal power to, in Massachusetts. What you don't have in that, for example, the prosecutor does not have a RICO power, does not have sort of the mail fraud statute with the broad authority the federal prosecutors have is far greater than the state attorney general. And to some extent, we're still one of the few states that doesn't give our state prosecutors broad powers equivalent to what the federal statutes have. And the state prosecutors face an awful lot greater difficulty in taking these cases on, because if they don't succeed, they absolutely pay a political price. If they take on these cases, the people prosecuted never forget, their friends never forget, and you bear the scars, and to some extent, you just simply have to believe it's the right thing to do, and those are judgment calls you make. But there are, in my view, these are cases that ought to be primarily responsibility of state attorneys general and district attorneys and the Ethics Commission. But you can't stop for the United States Attorney from taking over cases if they choose to.
Brad Bailey, could possibly the defendants file suit against the federal prosecutors? Is there a case to be made here that there was overreach and this caused real harm? I mean, you represent Ms. Tavares. Is there going? Is she considering any legal action?
There's no question it caused real harm across the board. There's a level of qualified immunity here, and unless you're dealing with something that could be established as a malicious prosecution, I don't see any basis for a suit. Of course, people sue on any number of grounds or for any reason. The fact that the verdicts have been reversed and my client has been acquitted is certainly going to give her the basis to look forward and not be looking back anymore.
Okay, gentlemen, great conversation. Brad Bailey, a criminal defense lawyer. He's also a former federal and state prosecutor. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Deb.
And Scott Harshberger, former Massachusetts Attorney General. He's now with the firm Kasner and Edwards. Scott, thanks as always.
My pleasure. Thank you, and congratulations, Brad.
Thank you, Scott. Always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
Stay with us. Coming up, a professor who's telling her students they should stop looking for a full-time job and prepare to work in the gig economy. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.